Hello, this is David Gork, Head of Public Policy at McFarlane's. Welcome to the latest in our Policy in Practice podcasts. Today we're going to be talking about rent controls, a policy that was once fashionable, then very unfashionable, but now back in the UK, in Scotland, and talked about at least and campaigned for in other parts of the UK. It never really went away in some parts of the world. Popular with some renters, generally considered by most economists to be a bad idea. It was Assar Lindbeck, the Swedish economist and chairman of the Nobel Prize of Economics judges, who once described it as the best way to destroy a city other than bombing. So not a huge enthusiast for the policy there, but it is much talked about. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Nicole Mitchell, who is head of real estate strategy and policy, and Lizzie Fielding, who is a senior associate in our commercial real estate group. And we're going to be talking about what is happening, where is it going, what the implications might be, and a bit about the market reaction. But to kick us off, Nicole, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about the headwinds in the economy and the impact on the real estate market and how it is experiencing that, in particular, how the living sectors are faring generally, to give us a bit of background information on where we're going.
Sure, happy to. And I think it's important to remember that when we speak about the living sectors in the UK, we are now actually talking about quite a diverse range of specialist subsectors, not just the simple and straightforward landlord and tenant relationship. So we have, to use a few terms from the US market, multifamily assets, single family assets, co-living, purpose-built student accommodation, and a whole range of senior living options, and that's to name but a few. And these have also become an increasing focus of institutional investment in recent years. And the thing I observe in a lot of the capital market surveys is that the living sectors have remained towards the top of institutional wish lists in terms of investment options in 2023 and during the turbulence that followed the mini budget at the end of last year. If we take, for example, multifamily, that has remained pretty resilient throughout that last year, and Savills reported $4.3 billion of investment in 2022. And even in some of the more emergent subsectors, such as single-family rentals, we're seeing a pretty positive story. So very recently, there was some research released from Knight Frank, which said that there had been $450 million of deals signed in Q1 alone. That's up from last year. And $8 billion of unspent capital to be deployed in the next 3 to 5 years. So it's a pretty considerable. And we've seen numerous examples of quite high-profile and successful fundraisers for strategies focusing on the living sector. So all in all, it's been pretty positive to date. And generally speaking, the UK market has been characterised by consistent rental growth. And this is underpinned by the well-known fundamental shortage of rental homes in the UK relative to demand. And this mismatch has historically applied upwards pressure on rents and often exceeded investor underwriting assumptions. And if you take sectors such as multifamily and co-living, one of the main attractions in the current market is its inflation matching characteristics. So that natural churn of tenants coming in and out of assets means investors can regularly rebase rents in line with the market. But I think it's important to say, despite all of these positive news stories, it's not immune to the shifting macroeconomic backdrop. There's a high cost of debt, which it's difficult to get away from, and many strategies are becoming more challenging because of that. Equity investors have the upper hand for sure. And rental growth in many of these subsectors is expected to moderate as household incomes continue to be squeezed. And there is some evidence of pricing adjustments in some of these living subsectors. But it remains to be seen exactly to what extent this will play out. And we're going to be watching the market data quite closely as we proceed through the rest of 2023.
So in short, Nicole, it'd be fair to say some areas of nervousness, but generally rents have done pretty well if you're a landlord in recent months, and generally rents going up higher than incomes are.
Exactly.
I suppose that brings us to the debate about rent controls, because that's a difficult environment for many people if they're seeing their rents going up faster than their incomes, and hence we see calls for more intervention from the government. So Lizzie, let's turn to you. And the one place where we have actually seen some policies that are designed to respond to this has been in Scotland. Do you want to just talk us through what's the Scottish government has done in this area?
Yeah, of course. So, as you say, they've introduced some new legislation. It's called the Cost of Living Tenant Protection Scotland Act 2022, which was introduced last year. And it basically imposed a temporary rent freeze across the private and social rented sectors and purpose-built student accommodation, which was pretty big we haven't seen much of this, especially in the UK before. The rent cap basically expires at the end of this month, but is actually extended till the end of September. But the headline point is from the 1st of April 2023, if a private landlord chooses to increase a tenant's rent mid-tenancy, that increase is essentially capped at 3%. Private landlords can alternatively be able to apply for a rent increase of up to 6% to help cover certain increases in costs, but you know they're very defined and limited circumstances which won't always apply. And also the Scottish Parliament intend to bring forward a new housing bill this year, which includes more long-term rent control measures and potentially a permanent national rent control for resi premises. So it's pretty contentious and quite a shift really from previous policies. There's mentions of a moratorium on the enforcement of evictions as well. So that will also go further than just rent caps itself.
Now the argument against rent controls of any kind is, you know, you can't distort the market or you can't buck the market, as Margaret Thatcher once said. And if high rents are sort of driven by a lack of housing, rent controls is only going to make that problem worse. So without revealing my own sort of personal views, that sounds quite a persuasive argument to me. What's been the reaction in terms of investors and the market more generally to the policy viewed by the Scottish government?
There's a little spoiler there that you've created, because that's basically been their reaction, as you say.
I'm sorry, Lizzie.
No,
spoil it. But well, no, there we go. My prejudices are confirmed. That's always good.
No, that has been largely the reaction, certainly from the real estate market. So, I mean, the big concern is basically investors will divert investment funds intended for delivery of new homes for rent in Scotland. And we're seeing that already, some large developments falling through. And this is particularly unwelcome in Scotland at the moment, because the Scottish build-to-rent sector is fairly new compared to sort of other areas. So it really needs to attract inward capital, a lot of it. And it's really impacted, according to, you know, general commentators. So much so that there's, you know, talks of launching challenges to legislation, petitions for judicial review. As you say, the problem is it seems that the housing demand just continues to outstrip the supply. And so any diversion of funding from the delivery will also be felt at the tenant level. Because if there's not enough houses, long term, there's going to be upward pressures on rents anyway. So it's not necessarily, rent caps are not necessarily a long term solution, is how a lot of people have felt. There's also a sort of concern about the quality of development and grade of housing stock and the ability of maybe less experienced developers to enter into the market. And in terms of the costs for landlords now with increased regulation, ESG, they just can't, they will struggle more and more to be able to afford to maintain and repair buildings. So again, creating problems for tenants and making it a lot less attractive for landlords to enter the market. It's really tricky. And obviously tenant representative groups are really happy to see the fact that there's something being done in the context of the cost of living crisis, and something needs to be done. But whether the rent caps is actually going to help renters in the long time, or actually they're going to be lost without suitable accommodation and there's going to be a real deficit, that's the real concern here. And you know, maybe the focus should have been more on housing supply itself. It's difficult to find positive commentary at this time, I must say.
I suppose that's sort of open up out. I mentioned earlier that rent controls of various descriptions have been used in many places around the world. Are there any particular jurisdictions that are worth looking at? Are there some places where people would say, oh, maybe it is working? And to what extent can we look at other jurisdictions to see if there are lessons to be learned from them?
Yeah, so looking at Europe, let's say, a bit more wider, there have been some examples of rent caps, but again, a few spoilers, it is tricky to see how, you know, find a lot of commentary seeing how that's been really successful. So in Berlin, for example, you know, rent caps or limits were introduced back in 2015. Then a further rent cap came into force in February 2020, which actually basically froze rents from their level at June 2019 for 5 years. So it was a pretty big movement. But actually in April 2021, it was found to be unconstitutional because it was regarded as a state getting involved in A, more federal government issues on rent caps, but B, generally getting involved in the private market, as you said initially. So that's been quite a contentious point, as well as just the general same sort of commentary about it having a detrimental effect long term on renters, discouraging development, but also appreciating that Berlin has a real problem with affordability and, you know, hedge funds and private equity firms buying up the city and making it unaffordable. So, yeah, it's been really contentious there. Sweden have had similar rent regulations. Anyone in Sweden is actually entitled to permanent tenancy of a rent controlled apartment. But in reality, again, it leads to how it's seen as having actually led to housing shortages, and often apparently the average wait for rent controlled apartments now are 9 years. So it seems like in practice, the concerns about the Scottish legislation are in fact happening in countries where it's actually in place. There's also a loophole in Sweden about the fact that landlords are now changing property use from resi to commercial to get around this. So much so that I think there was a sort of plan to ease rent controls for a new build apartments, and it resulted in the Prime Minister being ousted in no confidence vote. So it just shows how controversial and contentious the point is, and it's difficult to see how it actually works in practice. One point to be aware of is potentially it's also difficult for us to compare to Europe, because UK rent in Europe, it's more common for a larger pool of people to rent than here. So again, that needs to be taken into account. And then somewhere like Canada, for example, a rent regulation is applied differently in different provinces, which permits localities to apply their own variation, you know, in a sort of very bespoke way, dealing with local issues and stresses. Again, it would be very difficult to potentially apply that here unless we devolved all power regionally for all rent caps. So that's a potential commentary. So yeah, it's, again, sorry to be the bearer of bad news, it's tricky to find many examples of where it's been very, very successful.
Now, I just mentioned the sort of US, and of course, one of the things about rent controls is that you do get winners and losers. If you're a beneficiary of lower rent, and there's always that thing with Friends, isn't it? How they've got these fabulous apartments overlooking Central Park or whatever, even though Chandler's the only one with a decent high-paying job.
Such a plot hole.
I know. Well, I'm not sure it was. I think because of rent controls. Oh. So it was perfectly possible that, you know, a waitress and a chef could have this sort of fantastic apartment. But anyway, that isn't actually real life. But New York and San Francisco are the two cities in the US where it's been used most. Is that right?
Exactly right. And they are the most notable exceptions. And that focuses on sort of security deposits being capped and there being limits on how much rent they can take up front. That's really helped renters. I think that's right. Yeah. So there has been some, I mean, I think there is still concerns about housing supply and things like that. I mean, it was only passed in 2019, so we're still sort of seeing the long-term impact of it, of them. Yeah, those two are the sort of notable exceptions in terms of ones that are sort of applied quite, in practice. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and I've certainly seen studies showing that in San Francisco, rent controls have meant that if you're rent controlled, yes, the price has gone, has stayed down, but it's actually meant that those properties that don't have rent control applying to it have gone up by more than they would otherwise have done.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, we should talk a little bit about the UK. We obviously talked about Scotland, but the history in the UK, we used to have it and then we don't. Fair summary?
Yeah, I think that's right. So after 1989, PRS rents in most of the UK were deregulated on newly created tenancies. So it was definitely in motion, but it hasn't been for quite some time. There's various different debates on why that sort of fell away, but it always comes back to the same point about sort of getting involved in the private market more generally and the political sort of press around it. But I think the focus is potentially more on rent regulation during the term of a tenancy rather than actually restricting the rent levels itself from the start, because again, that's sort of being the focus on how a government sort of regulates the industry. But yes, we haven't seen them for quite some time.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, I think, on the sort of politics of this, where it goes. We have had it, obviously, in Scotland. Sadiq Khan has called for it in London. Andy Burnham in Greater Manchester has been supportive, as has Steve Rotherham in Liverpool, the Liverpool City region. But no real sign of enthusiasm from the Labour Party at a national level. So Keir Starmer hasn't expressed any support for it. They're perhaps a little bit more worried about not wanting to send anti-business signals to Middle England than any of the sort of metro mayors have to be. It's going to be very interesting to see to what extent the Labour Party embraces devolution. And Lisa Nandy, who's sort of got the shadow job here, is certainly supportive of devolution. And it's possible, but by no means inevitable, that rent control could be something that is devolved. And you know, we've talked about it in the context of the US and indeed Europe. Sometimes this is done on a city basis. So could this matter be something that is devolved? Truth be told, we don't really know yet. It's not entirely clear. I'd be very, very surprised if there was a national policy in this area, but Sadiq Khan is going to keep pushing for this to be a matter that becomes devolved. He'll probably have a bit of support within the Labour Party for that. And I think that's one to sort of watch this space. I wouldn't like to confidently guess at the moment which way the Labour Party would go, but it's certainly one that we should be keeping an eye on. And as I say, I think it's going to be very much in the context of devolution to city mayors. I think we'll see plenty of devolution to city mayors if there's a Labour government, but whether this will be included, we wait to see. Now, Nicole, let me just bring you back in terms of the sort of market sentiment on to what extent this is going to impact on market sentiment in the living sectors at the moment. How worried are investors, operators and managers?
I think it's certainly on the radar of lots of investors, managers and service providers in the living sector. It's hard to remember a conference or a meeting in the living sector I've attended of late where it hasn't at least been referred to. But as you say, nobody really knows how this is going to play out. And that's perhaps why it is impacting sentiment in certain areas. I think one important thing to mention is, as Lizzie mentioned, it was the speed and the bluntness of the measures in Scotland that did spook certain pools of institutional capital, and that was redirected to other parts of the UK. And we've heard about some investors really moderating their assumptions they use in their underwriting in light of this current uncertainty and assuming very little or no sort of rental uplift in their investments. Others I've spoken to have said, oh, we're not worried. Our living sector assets typically have a short lease of 1 or 2 years. So as long as we can rebase the rent to the market rate at the end of each lease, we're not too concerned. But I think the problem is with that perspective is that we just don't know. And it's really an assumption that you will be able to do that. And as I think, as Lizzie mentioned, when she was explaining different applications of this in different jurisdictions, you can have both measures within a tenancy itself and measures between tenancies. And there have been reasonably few clues in terms of the current context as to the direction this could take. I think the other point is, and it's the point I made at the start of this discussion, is that the private rented sector in the UK is now a very diverse and complex thing. And it's difficult to understand exactly how they're going to delineate the scope of any provisions. So, for example, would this be linked to a particular use class in the planning system? And that's also something that I've heard quite a few people speculating about. And as a final point, I think it's wrong to assume that all investors simply want unlimited rental upside. A lot of the institutional investors I've spoken to at MIPIM and in recent weeks have really recognise the value of a well-functioning rental market from a societal perspective and in terms of their own ESG commitments, and have spoken about setting rents at a level they feel is an appropriate level. And they feel that institutional capital has a key role in addressing the UK's housing need. Now, I appreciate not every investor is going to have that perspective, but it's far from a black and white picture of landlords just simply wanting the highest achievable market rent. There are a broader range of considerations today, I think. I think my final comment would be, I just hope that should we go down the route of rental controls in England and Wales, there is a degree of industry engagement, because if nothing else, it will avoid the situation we saw in Scotland, with some capital sources getting spooked and rapidly retreating from the market, and that resulting in a reduced supply of new housing. Because I think we can all agree there is a fundamental structural need for housing supply in the UK.
No, thank you very much for that. And also thank you, Lizzie, for your contributions to this discussion. As I mentioned earlier, economists don't tend to like rent controls of any description, really. The fear is that if you suppress the market price, you'll have an impact on supply. That's the theory. What we seem to have seen with Scotland is that the practice has coincided with the theory. But you can also see the political appeal at a time when rents are increasing well ahead of wages. And that might be an argument that a future Labour government, or perhaps Labour mayors with new devolved powers given to them by new Labour government, might be tempted to take further action in this area. Certainly one I think we will be keeping a very close eye on. This may well have an impact in terms of institutional investors and the market more broadly. So one to keep an eye out. We may well return to this topic in a future podcast, but thank you very much for listening. I thank Nicole and Lizzie for joining us this afternoon. Do look out for the next episode from our Policy and Practice podcasts, and thank you very much for listening.